The wilderness and the dry land shall be glad, the desert shall rejoice and blossom. Like the crocus, it shall blossom abundantly and rejoice with joy and singing. The glory of Lebanon shall be given to it, the majesty of Carmel and Sharon. They shall see the glory of the Lord, the majesty of our God. Strengthen the weak hands, make firm the feeble knees. Say to those who are of a fearful heart, be strong, do not fear. Here is your God, he will come with vengeance, with terrible recompense he will come and save you. Then the eyes of the blind shall be opened, and the ears of the deaf unstopped. Then the lame shall leap like a deer, and the tongue of the speechless shall sing for joy. For water shall break forth in the wilderness and streams in the desert. The burning sand shall become a pool, and the thirsty ground springs of water. The haunt of jackals shall become a swamp. The grass shall become reeds and rushes. A highway shall be there, and it shall be called the Holy Way. The unclean shall not travel on it, but it shall be for God's people. No traveler, not even fools, will go astray. No lion shall be there, nor shall any ravenous beast come up on it. They shall not be found there. But the redeemed shall walk there, and the ransomed of the Lord shall return, and come to Zion with singing. Everlasting joy shall be upon their heads. They shall obtain joy and gladness, and sorrow and sighing shall flee away. This is the word of the Lord. Can I add the words of Charlie Brown? I think there must be something wrong with me, Linus. Christmas is coming and I'm not happy. I don't feel the way I'm supposed to feel. I like getting presents and sending Christmas cards and decorating trees and all of that, but I'm still not happy. I always end up feeling depressed. You may think those are unusual words for the holidays, much less for the beginning of a sermon, but today I want to take them seriously. Ever since cartoonist Charles Schulz put them on the lips of a young cartoon boy, they have resonated with a lot of people. For all the beauty and the sparkle of the season, this is a hard time for many, many folks. They may dress up, they may come to church, they may put on a happy face, but underneath there could be an emotional struggle. Now, when I was a little kid, I thought that Christmas sadness comes when you don't get all the gifts that you hoped for. Fact is, there's a lot about this season that tests our spirits. The brutal North American winter is hard on our bones. The dark sky plays on our emotions. And somehow it dawns on us that few of our families actually resemble the people on those Hallmark Channel stories. And then, as one of my 90-year-old friends here puts it, the older you get, the more you have to reduce your expectations. To this, the prophet Isaiah says, we will rejoice with joy. Now that's a bracing word, Charlie Brown. So let me just say, pastorally, if there is any sadness in your life today, I want to take that seriously. Because we simply can't take all those negative feelings that come and go and shove them in the closet until February, waiting there along with our credit card payments. And if we do that, they'll still be waiting for us. Any unresolved grief lingers in the shadows. Any unmanaged frustration can be dished out on others. So we've heard about the stewardship of our money. Today, in this poem from Isaiah, invites us to be good stewards of our emotions, to take care of what's going on in our spirits. I was reflecting on this yesterday when I was stuck in a traffic jam in the middle of town. The car in front of me seemed to be going in reverse. It was going so slowly. I wanted to lay on the horn. I have places to go, people to see. And then I make my way to the shopping mall, and there are no parking spaces. When one opens up, it was too narrow. When I go into the store, they didn't have the item that they promised on the phone to save for me. Anybody else know how this is? It's very tempting to let anger direct your reactions and for dismay to entice you in. And that's just travel and shopping. If you're working, the job is always more stressful in December. There are sales quotas to meet, reports to fill out, anxious people to please. And then there are the complications of our families. Shall I say anything more about that and all of its surrounding drama? And to this, the prophet Isaiah declares, "Everlasting joy shall be upon their heads. Sorrow and sighing shall flee away." How can he talk this way? I don't know. He just does it. Five times in this brief poem, he speaks of joy. The desert shall rejoice, the barren places shall break into blossom, the speechless people with no song will sing. And like a lot of the prophets of ancient Israel, he speaks in promissory language. He makes this promise. He points to a future some distance ahead and declares that it's really close and practically here right now. Now, please notice that he's offering a very different word from the advice that my fellow crabby people give to one another in December. They'll say, "Suck it up and ignore the sadness. Put up another string of lights. Eat another cookie. Have some more eggnog. Get in the holiday spirit. Have yourself a merry little Christmas. And above all, get busy." So to hear some folks say it, all you have to do is put yourself in a good mood by talking to yourself, coaching yourself, or engaging in one more activity and shoehorning it into your schedule. If only it were that easy. But Isaiah knows it's not. He knows how life can be. He speaks in this poem of weak hands and feeble knees. He knows that there are people who have a feeble heart. He knows that there are some who cannot see, others who cannot hear, and plenty who cannot move, and that sorrow and sighing are real. But so is the possibility of God's action. That's real too. This undated poem points to a moment when God will give a home to those who have no other home. God will restore their lives. God will reestablish their physical well-being and affect the environment around them. They shall obtain joy and gladness, and sorrow and sighing shall flee away. That verb obtain, it's not a purchase. You can't buy joy at a store, as we well know. It just kind of comes. And that's good news, that God promises joy. So what's joy? Is it happiness? No. Someone describes joy this way. It's a gift. It's far from being a positive attitude or a completely upbeat mood. Joy is at best described a sure confidence, even a kind of astonished laughter, because you discover that God is at work in our world and that that is more central to our stories than we are to ourselves. I like that description. Joy is more than a transitory emotion, as with all the other emotions that come and go, the frustration of being in traffic, the anger of the people who are going in reverse. Now, joy is a deep confidence, an astonished laughter. It's rooted in the kind of God that we have. God's work in the world begins here with those who have weak hands, feeble knees, fearful hearts. It starts in the crevices, and it happens as confidence replaces fear, as Laughter interrupts sorrow. Joy is the deep and abiding knowledge that no matter what happens to us, no matter who gets elected, no matter who slips on the ice, that God is with us and that God is still working out the restoration of the world. And this is something to keep reminding one another of. Because Isaiah's poem is not some carrot on a stick, some vain hope that just keeps you going a few more steps. No, it's this confidence that at the heart of all things, there is a greater love in the universe than we see day to day. That there's a greater goodness than the recurring nastiness that comes up. That there's a greater wisdom than all the short-sighted stupidity that all those other people seem to have. And that there truly is a salvage operation that heaven is undertaking on earth. And it may first be happening in the crevices, the weak hands, the feeble knees, the fearful hearts. We have the privilege, you and I, of proclaiming this message, passing it along, encouraging one another with it. And maybe that's the true purpose of all the Christmas carols we sing or the cards and messages that we might still be trying to send out. And we know that this is more than just holiday hype. It's the promise that God's saving work can always be trusted. With Israel, we remember how God brought them home. And in light of that, we can affirm that God desires all of us, in some deeper sense, to find our way home. I don't know about you, but I find that in the darkest month of the year, the light sometimes comes in surprising ways. A lady with a lot of physical ailments was telling me about, she was feeling blue this last week. All the oxygen was being drained from her atmosphere, she said. And suddenly, she said, I turned on the wrong radio station in my car, and there are the Ray Conniff singers chirping out, God rest ye merry gentlemen, let nothing you dismay. She said, it was at the moment precisely when I was feeling the most dismay. Just enough, she said, to nudge me out of my funk. Somebody else was telling me about being in a congested store, a place with untrained clerks and a frustrating floor plan, blinding lights, and way too many pushy people. Yet in the middle of the store, a young boy with curls was playing catch with his grandmother, and both of them breaking into contagious laughter. It lifted me out of a long slump in the doldrums of the mall. I want to be around happiness like that. Frederick Buechner says it well. He's pretty blunt. I'm just going to quote him. The great thing about Christmas, he says, is that we've never been able to kill it. There's something irrepressible about the event, something about the light of God that will not be extinguished. Jesus Christ has come into the world. We prepare for that. We await that in its fullness. It is Christ who gives sight to those who are unable to see, he who opens the ears of those who have long stopped listening, and he who offers a home to those who have no other home. So there I was yesterday on call for a little church that has no pastor. One of the elders had called a few weeks ago and said, we've had a request for a baptism. We don't know what to do. Can you help us out? Help us find somebody. Well, I don't know. I said, is there a rush? Well, you know, the grandmother is terminally ill. They want her to be around to still see it. We've explored a couple of plans. And then she said, could you do it on a Saturday? Well, it's a Saturday in December. I ought to be putting lights on my tree. We've had the tree up for a week and a half. Maybe put some lights on it finally, but sure. Okay, I'll go up for a baptism, put on my tie and my jacket, drive over here, unlock my office, get my little baptism book, lock the door, make sure the lights are off, drive up there. And when I arrive, There are four little kids lined up, not one. They all have the same last name, but I couldn't tell who was who. It seemed, shall we say, the family situation was a bit complicated. Whose isn't? But that doesn't matter to me. So I said, okay, come on in. We went into the sanctuary. I want to make this special. We're going to go in. There are about 30 of us, families, church folk. There's no organist. So I sit down and I said, we're going to sing Away in the Manger, hymn 25, and we sing Away in the Manger. I hadn't planned on a sermon, but I found a quick one on my feet. And then I took the four kids by hand in a row, along with anybody who wanted to stand with them, and I gave each one a proper Trinitarian splash. Then I walked them into the center of the room, and I said what I often say. I said, kids, your family just got bigger. Their name is Church. These are the people who are going to remind you of what I've just told you, that you belong to God. They're going to teach you the love of Jesus and teach you how to show it to one another. The littlest one, two-year-old Lily, looks up at me with big eyes. I crouch down to look her in the eye. I say, Lily, as you grow, I don't know what the world's going to tell you, but I'm going to tell you now, Jesus loves you and you belong to him. She looks up at me, wraps her hand around my finger. Her mother is crying, big wet tears, whispering, thank you, thank you. Who am I kidding? I was crying too. And then I said, kids, your Christian education begins today. Your big new family is going to teach you a song. It's number 40 in the blue book. And we sang, Joy to the World, the Lord is come. You know, it's a Saturday in December. I could have been home. I could have been decorating my tree. Instead, I was telling four little kids that they are loved with an infinite love and that they belong to God. They're only words, but they are the truth. And in speaking them, hearing them, joy came. Joy to the world, I tell you. Joy to the world.